Welcome to Diplomacy, the podcast for communications in mergers and acquisitions, brought to you by Corporate Diplomat. With our guests, we will discuss how the financial, economic, political, and social context can actually impact the value created by a transaction. My name is Louis de Schalemer, and I will be your host. Welcome to Diplomacy, the podcast dedicated to communications in mergers and acquisitions, brought to you by Corporate Diplomat. My name is Louis de Schalemer, and I will be your host. Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome Sándor Talás. Sándor, you are a PhD student, a seasoned student at the University of Queensland in Australia, and you're joining us from there today. And you are working on getting a deeper understanding of the human aspects in M&A and organizational change. Sándor has been involved in M&A and post-merger integration for more than 20 years. He received his MBA from London Business School in 1998 and since has been involved on large and small integration projects, some of which while working at McKinsey. In 2022, he started a PhD at the University of Queensland with the objective to develop a better understanding of why so many M&A projects fail to deliver on expectations and what management can do about it. What intrigued me in his approach was when he wrote about his initial intuition. With two professors, we developed a fascinating theory on why post-merger integrations are going wrong and how the traumatic memories of PMI events may impact people even years later. Sándor's theory is that PMI post-merger integration don't fail because of cultural differences, but rather because of the impact of psychological load of change on employees and managers. The impact could be so massive that it drains people's psychological resources that are needed to control our behavior and emotions, thereby opening the doors for unregulated emotions and behaviors, which in turn negatively impact the integration outcome. In professional terms, and you will hear that throughout this episode, this is called the theory of depletion of self-regulatory resources. Our conversation covered a broad number of topics. To make this more digestible for our listeners, I've regrouped the topics and I'm presenting today part one, how culture and self-regulation may impact the outcome of post-merger integration. In part two, we'll explore the positive, proactive influence management can make. Thank you for joining us today, Sándor. I'm pleased to have you with us.
Thanks a lot, Lou. It's a pleasure to be invited. It's an honor. I'm happy to talk about my research. Yes, I'm a mature PhD student. If anybody would have told me 3 years ago that I'm going to be a PhD student in Australia researching emotions in organizations and the impact of emotions on in organizational change, I would have had a great laugh. But here I am.
And with the study of human behavior in M&A, communication is never far away. So that's why I really love your research and your approach. And I'm very keen to hear more and learn something today. So what is the research you're doing on human behavior, the human factor in M&A? What is your research about?
My research is about trying to understand what happens to people during post-merger integration. In broader sense, through the M&A process. It has been described more than 40 years ago that there is a strange phenomenon they call merger syndrome, that people start to behave erratically after months of being in the merger process. Merger in this sense, I mean both acquisition and merger. So when there's a little bit of inconsistency in the way we speak about M&A, both for mergers and for acquisitions, we talk about post-merger integration. So when I talk about mergers, I mean both acquisitions and actual mergers. In fact, there are no real mergers.
there's always an upper dog who actually sort of, even if for political reasons, for communication reasons, they talk about the merger of equals. Basically, my experience was aligned with the literature that said that basically there is this strange phenomena that they call the merger syndrome. And people start to behave differently. And I also had this experience that on the first week, they smile. After 2 months, they start to slam doors. After 4 months, they start to cry or shout on meetings. Why? What's going on? It was also described, and again, sort of, I experienced that people start to behave in ways that are explicitly against their own interests. It's not logical what they are doing, but they are getting emotional. They are getting do things that, shall we say, normal, reasonable people wouldn't do. And people should be reasonable and normal to get to those positions where they are. Yet something is happening. Something is going on. There's a process. Nobody really understands. And there were lots of ideas. Obviously, consultants have some solutions. Researchers looked into various things. But nobody really could get to an answer what is really going on. The classic answer is sort of why M&A doesn't work is cultural difference. When M&A works, integration works, management was great. When it doesn't work, well, cultural differences, what can we do? Not as if it wouldn't be managers' task to manage cultural differences, in particular in this type of process where they could prepare for that. But the problem with cultural differences is that, first of all, there's no correlation between M&A outcome and cultural distance. Also, they looked into things that national cultural differences and corporate cultural differences, which is more important. Again, sort of some researchers said, okay, it's this national cultural difference. The others said, it's corporate, inconclusive. But the worst thing is that there is no process associated with it. Just because there are cultural differences, how do people get from smiling to slamming doors to shouting? And without a process, you can't manage it. So this was one of those questions that I got fascinated about. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to a professor here at the University of Queensland, who is also a world-renowned expert in the role of emotions in organizations. And as we discussed these things, he got interested. He said, okay, if you're interested in, let's work on this together. Why don't you apply as a PhD student? And well, the rest is history.
Chandler Tallis writes, we suggest that cultural differences may negatively impact the PMI process by fueling a vicious circle of emotional reactions and subsequent dysfunctional behavior. As a result, the compound impact of heightened emotionality depletes the self-regulatory resources of individuals and results in a series of self-regulation failures with detrimental consequences on individual performance and organizational conflict. Cultural differences can contribute to the intensification and proliferation of negative affective states across the organization in multiple ways. They can generate negative emotions, escalate emotional reactions, impede the messaging function of emotions, and hinder managerial actions aimed at easing organizational tensions. This takes us into the interconnection of culture and communication, the impact of cultural differences, and the role of culture.
Cultural conflict can have an impact. Cultural distance is inconclusive because there are conflicts that can emerge from cultures. For example, emotions are one of them. Cultural differences impede the messaging function of emotions. Emotions have very important messaging functions. When we are on a meeting, especially in an environment that we are familiar with, then we can get messages from a raised eyebrow, from a little nod, from a little shake of head. And we pick those messages up. Communication. That's also communication. But when there are cultural differences, then many of these emotions become incomprehensible. Just as a very sort of Thai people may have 17 smiles, I can distinguish only three. And even those might not be the right interpretation of those smiles. Cultural differences can generate negative emotions on their own. Cultural differences make the reading of emotions more difficult. Cultural differences make emotional attending more difficult. When you believe that somebody looks upset, how do you approach them and what do you do? And what's really fascinating is that it can get into a negative spiral, because once we get into a negative mood, we become less open to cultural differences. When you are in good mood, oh, how interesting that you think about this differently. When we are in negative mood, this is the way to do it. Just do it. And obviously, this can generate further emotions. So cultural differences do have a role, but not a direct role, I believe.
Chandra Talaj and his colleagues are looking at ways how our minds work and how that can help us change how we act at work. And there's three items: self-regulation, the mental process we use to control our mind's functions, hope, our positive assessment of the future, and the emotional memories, or our personal and collective experiences.
But it seems that there are really three psychological processes that determine how people change their behavior over time. In the work, when I'm talking about sort of the few months to few years time frame, one is self-regulation. The other is hope, or a positive assessment of the future. Hope is a process. Of course, also an emotions, but developing hope is a process. And the third one is the emotional memories or experiences. In essence, there are three variables that appear to be determine how people change their behavior and performance in these sort of during organizational change. One of them, changing goals. The other is changing psychological resources. And the third one is changing memories or experiences, and especially experiences of the process. I have to do a little bit of explanation about, especially about self-regulation. Self-regulation is something we all do. Basically, we try to look attentive, we focus on things, especially in a work environment. We have to deliver things. There are lots of desires that we have to control. And sort of interestingly, the two strongest desires are sleep and sex, that we have to sort of try to just get away from those thoughts and focus on the work. This has been known for a long time. And also it has been known that basically school is a self-regulatory training. We learn gradually that we have to deliver on given tasks instead of going out and play football or pick flowers or whatever. It has been also known that self-regulatory skills are one of the best predictors of people's long-term performance, how successful they become in life. And these are different from people to people. So it's like muscle strength. And the reason why I mentioned muscle strength, because it's a relatively new theory, 25-year-old, that self-regulation works like muscle strength. Normally, we do not notice that we use our muscles because the use is very little, but whatever resources to use to work our muscles are meaning little depletion, no depletion, and then they can be replenished very quickly. But we can overuse it. We can overuse our muscles. The same, we can overuse our self-regulation. And when we deplete our resources that our self-regulation relies on, then we can't do things that we would normally do. And I got fascinated with this because I learned that there are three activities that are most depleting. One is forcing ourselves to do things that we don't want to do. The second is sort of cognitive work, sort of sense-making, decision-making, especially under uncertainty, when sort of our wheels are spinning. And the third is
regulating our emotional expressions and our behavior. And I said, wow, this is M&A. This is post-merger integration. And I looked into what are the symptoms of depletion. And it's of performance deterioration, when sort of you can't control your wandering thoughts, ego depletion or loss of willpower, when people sort of stare blank, and expression of unregulated emotions and behavior. That was another wow. Well, this is really what happens over time. So this looks something very, very exciting. The reason why it's tricky to catch it, because when we are part depleted, the same with muscle strength, we start to allocate our resources. Yes, I'm too tired, I can't do this, but if you've got the right motivation, then, oh yes, after all, I can do. I did a 20K run, it's difficult to go out to the kitchen, but if the tiger shows up at the corner, I can move. The same in the office. I can be depleted, but if there's an interesting meeting, I can go there, be present, active, show interest, then go to my office and stare blank for 2 hours. So depletion is the reduction of your resource levels. And then basically it refers to situations when your resource levels are getting lower. At an extreme case, sort of zero, but it never really happens, because self-regulation is so important that your organism will always try to preserve some of these resources. So depletion in that sense is a reduction of resources. And then we talk about sort of depleted, that means a severe lack of resources. That doesn't mean that the psychological resources are not there. That means that they are at such a low level that your organism, your body preserves them for the vital functions, like eating, sleeping, other things. As with muscle resources, it is possible with the right motivation to overuse them. And that's sort of the classic situations where long distance athletes are chased into their depths by motivation. They keep going until they used up all the resources, though they overridden, and that's part of how doping works, that they override the natural barrier that tries to preserve essential level of resources. So depletion, in short, is really sort of the reduction of the level of resources. In a prolonged M&A situation, integration situation, although we replenish these resources every day, when we eat, when we go home and sleep, and so on, but there can be, and quite often, there is a situation when the use of these resources during work, or even sort of after work, just when we, our minds are keep working on the problems, the issues that we're facing, trying to make sense of the world, as I said, cognitive efforts use the same resource, that we can get into a severe stage of depletion or under-resourcing. Now, when we talk about how we allocate our lower than usual level of resources, the positive assessment of the future comes in. And there were different schools of positive psychology. I prefer hope. Hope is a positive assessment of the future. The reason why I like hope, because there is a process associated with it. Hope is learnable. There were some very interesting experiments. A positive outlook can be a trait, but hope can be learnable.
To perform, you need self-regulation. For self-regulation, you need hope. And for hope, you need positive experiences. This is the approach that Shanotalas and his colleagues from the University of Queensland are taking to get a better understanding of the reasons for failures of post-merge integration in M&A. This was part one of our discussion. Thank you for listening to Diplomacy Today.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Diplomacy. Please explore our website, www.corporate-diplomat.com, or our LinkedIn page. I hope you have enjoyed. Feel free to subscribe and hit the follow button. Have a great day.